Okay, we're waiting for electrons?
You can go.
I'd like to call this council meeting for the City of St. Mary's, Georgia, to order for July 6, 2015. And the invocation's gonna be given by Ms. Williams.
Please bow your heads. Gracious Heavenly Father, tonight we gather to do the city's business. We are happy as we reflect upon the birthday of America we have just observed. With the parade, the fireworks, the food and craft booths, the sports demonstrations, the singing, band playing, volunteering, and camaraderie, most of us found a way to enjoy our Independence Day. Yet in our glow of happiness, we must pause and reflect for a moment on those who sacrificed so that we can celebrate. We give thanks to all who paved the way in making this country a bastion of freedom. Preserve our country, state, and city. Keep us strong against those who seek to destroy our way of life. Protect and honor those who serve us still, on land, in air, at sea. Lend us your wisdom so that we, council members, city staff, and citizens alike, are able to find peaceful solutions to our problems, and make us ever mindful of the needs of others. In thy holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Yes, sir. Councilmember Nutter, post one.
Here.
Councilmember Forsky, post two.
Present.
Councilmember Gant, post three.
Present.
Councilmember Riley, post four.
Present.
Councilmember Caldwell, post five.
Here.
Councilmember Williams, post six.
Present.
Mayor Morrissey.
Here.
Sir, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. All right, I would like to have a motion for the approval of the June 10th, 2015 special call sitting.
Meeting minutes, Mr. Nutter.
June 10th only.
Right, June 10th only. Second?
Second.
All right, Mr. Gant. Any comments, corrections, changes? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Abstain. I wasn't present.
Got the opposed. Man, I was going to get to abstain. But one abstention. Okay, and Madam Clerk, got one abstention from Ms. Kowalski. Otherwise, it's 5-yay. Thank you. Okay, now I need a motion on June 15, 2015 regular City Council meeting.
Still moved.
Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second from Mrs. Williams. Any comments?
I sent one minor change to Deborah's email, and I'm not sure, but there was one on page 9, last sentence, there were two A's in there in the last sentence.
Just a typo.
It's still, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that just needs to be removed.
We don't need to change much of that. Let's get the typo.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And do we have any abstentions? Okay. And one abstention, that's Mr. Nutter. So we have 5 yeas and an extension for Mr. Nutter. Thank you very much, Council. Now we have some presentations, and the first is the Georgia Department of Forestry, UGA Extension, Mr. Marr.
Yes, we had an issue that was brought to us from University of Georgia Extension Office, Ms. Castro-Warren, concerning the air potato vine. And bear with it, I'm going to let Ms. Warren step up and explain what about the air potato vine and mitigation measures that they're wanting to try.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We just need your name and
okay.
Address.
Yeah. I'm Jessica Warren. I'm the Camden County Agriculture and Natural Resources Extension Agent.
I actually live in St. Mary's as well. If you do want my address.
We need it, for the record.
Okay, my work address is in Woodbine. It's 1409 Georgia Avenue, Woodbine, 315.
Thank you.
I'm here today, like Bob said, to talk to you about the Arab skated vine. It's a very aggressive invasive species. It came over from Asia and Africa. It started in Florida, they started having trouble with it in the '80s. And it's become one of their most noxious weeds. It takes over their natural areas, it basically chokes out the tree canopy. It grows up to 8 inches a day, it's more aggressive than kudzu. Most people consider it worse than kudzu. It'll grow up to 70. Yeah. It'll grow up to 70 feet in length. And naturally, as most things from Florida, it moves on up, and we found it in Georgia. It's been down as high as the Carolinas, but most of those places, it really hasn't taken a good hold. But we've got a pretty good infestation of it here in St. Mary's. This was brought to my attention initially by a citizen, and I've started working with the Georgia Forestry Commission. The idea originally was that they would provide the herbicide and the labor if I would make the contacts with the homeowners and provide that relationship. Well, upon further investigation into the infestation in downtown, we found that basically herbicides aren't an option. It's too severe already. A lot of the vacant lots are just covered in this stuff. I mean, and it's over the canopy of mature trees. So it's not any way that we could really apply an herbicide without killing a lot of non-target plants, but also having drift onto other people's properties, health and safety concerns, things like that. So we started looking for another way to handle this so it doesn't get quite so out of control. And in Florida, they've begun using what's called the air potato beetle. Its Latin name is Lilia cirrus chinai, and it only feeds on air potato. They researched it for several years before they released it in Florida. They also had to get federal approval to release it there. Through their research, it doesn't feed on anything else. In its native land, which is China, it doesn't feed on any other species there either. It just feeds on the air potato and helps keep it under control. It basically defoliates the plant and uses up its carbohydrate reserves that way, and then the plant dies. And when it can't kill it completely, it at least keeps it under control. When it's finished, like it's saying, on one piece of property, it eliminated the population of air potato there, it'll move on to another area where another infestation is. It's very ecologically sound in that way. You're not spraying herbicides and having to worry about the issues with drift and with other species being exposed or the marsh being exposed. So far in Florida, they haven't had any problems with it. We have initiated and we've just received the permit to release these beetles. On a side note, since they are in Florida, they too will be here eventually on their own. The question is how much damage will be done before they get here. But we've received permission through the USDA APHIS Department, which is Animal and Plant Inspection Service. They've given us permission to bring it across state lines. I mean, really at that point, it could be released anywhere in the state of Georgia. But this is really kind of a great pilot project, I think, for St. Mary's as well, and especially the way that we care about our tree canopy and our huge old white oaks and a lot of these heritage-type trees. But we wanted to be very transparent about all of it. We want the community to be on board and to support this initiative because we think it's a good thing. And we've been working with some local landowners, and we've got several that have agreed to let us do releases on their property, but we wanted the county and the city to be on board.
Yeah, I had a question real quick. What happens if the beetle is successful in eating all of the potato vine? Will it adapt to some other plant life, or does it die out?
That's always a concern, but from all the research they've done, it dies when it loses its feed source.
Dies out?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
As far as we
know. Has this been done elsewhere in Georgia?
Nowhere else in Georgia.
So we're...
We would be the first place in the
first
state.
First place in Georgia, okay.
Nowhere else has applied for a permit or gotten a permit.
Okay. It's are other places being considered at this point, or?
Not that I'm aware of. Being that we're the furthest south, the closest to Florida, the most
right.
south Florida, our infestation is a lot worse. There are places further north who have seen some of it, but it just doesn't take hold the same way. It dies back in the wintertime, so, you know, our winters are not as cold,
no.
and don't last as long.
That's why we're here.
Have you made that presentation to the county yet?
I talked to Mr. Howard, and then he passed the information along to the commissioners.
Well, let me ask the question, when did they start the fetal program in Florida?
Their first release was in late 2011.
Okay, so it's relatively new program, but they've been using it in China?
Well, in China, the beetle's native, but the vine is too. So that's where they got the beetle from, and where their research began in Florida. And the Florida Department of Ag is actually, he breeds the beetles and then sends them out.
So the beetle defoliates the vine?
It does, it will sometimes feed on the tubers as well, but mainly defoliates it, but then the plant will use up the starch reserves that are in those potatoes.
So it can't come back again and again and again, once it's on the property?
It can, but this is the least likely scenario. It keeps it under control, because as long as there's a food source there, that beetle population will continue. Usually it kills it, so it can either eliminate it or just keep it at a very controllable level. The problem is without that, basically this plant, in addition to growing so aggressively, at every leaf node, it puts out one of those potatoes, which is why it's called air potato, because they're in the air. But those drop in the late summer, early fall. And every one of those will sprout a new plant. And in order to get rid of it manually, or even with herbicides, you still have to go in and remove every potato that falls. But most of them end up below the soil, so you can't, it's very difficult to find them all. But on a property that's very infested, which we've seen some down here, it's like, I compare it to an Easter egg hunt for toddlers. I mean, you're tripping over these things. There's just hundreds of them all over the ground.
Now you say it's in St. Mary's.
It is.
Okay. Well, some people may have some familiarity with this, but there are stories, obviously, about well-intentioned science bringing in some kind of animal countercourse to
rabbit stalks, right?
That's a good example. Exactly. So
brought in for the cows, and they wouldn't eat the stuff.
Yep.
But and gypsy moths are not necessarily the same story, but we've seen how difficult a situation like that can be. Given the severity of the situation in the canopy, and the science that's gone behind it, and the fact that it does exist in its natural state, and it's never, to your knowledge, based on the research that's being done and it's out there to the public, they do not go after any other vegetation.
They don't. And, you know, I will say that I myself am very hesitant about biological controls for the very reason that you're mentioning. It makes me very nervous. And actually, one of the people that I've been working very closely with at the Forestry Commission, he has the same concerns. He works with invasive species a lot, and normally he doesn't go for biological controls. But with this one, he said he actually felt pretty safe with it. I will say that over time, we have learned from our mistakes. And they're a lot more extensive with the research that goes into it and with making sure that those implications, as much as is foreseeable, will not happen. It's always a very slight possibility.
But you do say that this is, it's inevitable that the beetle
it'll
be up here.
Yeah, it's, that's my point. That's my point is that it's not as if we're inventing the wheel here. It's come, they exist in Florida and they will be here. It's just the timing.
Jessica, I read the information that we were given, but just to refresh my memory, the air potato vine itself was not deliberately introduced.
It was, well, there are mixed stories. When you do the research, and these are all from university sources, I mean, good sources, most of them coming out of the University of Florida. Some people thought it was brought in with the slave trade, but now the latest research, from what I understand, it says that based on the DNA of the species in Florida, that they believe it was actually sent over as a sample to the USDA by someone back in 1905. But it has been here since 1905.
Wow.
Just a couple questions. First off, you mentioned that it's pretty invasive in some of the St. Mary's properties. Can you give me a couple street coordinates so I can go look at it? So we can see
sure.
What it actually looks like?
You can. And I will tell you that pretty much any vacant lot that you find downtown will have it. From what I've seen, I haven't checked everyone out. A lot of them you'll have to walk into the woods. So it depends on how comfortable you are trespassing. There's a lot behind in his bed and breakfast. That big lot there has a ton of it. The further you walk into it, the more you will find. There's also a lot next to the Lockhart's house. And it's vacant. It has it as well. You can see more of that from the street.
So you're saying this could kill live oaks?
It can choke out any mature tree. There are photos and videos from Florida of wooded, acres and acres of wooded area, and literally all you see, as high as you can look on the ground in every direction, is just that vine.
So this potato vine would continue to live even when, after it's killed the canopy?
Okay, another question with regard to that. Do you have materials that you can share with the city or make available to the city that would be available to then the residents so that they can easily identify what it looks like? You know, I know I've got a couple of pictures in our council packet for this evening, but...
We can certainly do that. Also, it will run in the paper this week, and it'll have pictures in there as well.
Okay, so that'll help with the...
Yeah, and it talks about how to identify it. It has a very distinct heart-shaped leaf where all the veins in the leaf originate from the leaf base. And then once we get a little later in the year, the potatoes are very distinctive. Right now, they're not there, though. But a lot of these, in early spring, too, before it leaks out, I mean, you'll just see masses of what looks like dead vines that are covering the tops of trees.
So would an entrepreneurial chef be able to prepare these?
That's a good question. And, you know, I'm not quite sure how to answer that because... I've read some things that say it's edible, and I've read some things that say it's highly poisonous. And they're both credible sources. So I'm not taking my chances, but, you know.
You can be our test, our guinea pig, Mom.
What, are you trying to get rid of me?
I can make that recommendation, though.
Okay.
Don't give up. I have a question. I know we're releasing them on city property. How much of a problem do we actually have on city property?
That is a good question, and that's one I'm not sure of yet. I met with Bobby and with Mr. Holman to talk about that, and you know, Bobby and I talked about how to identify it, and he had been looking for it previously. So I've also told him, you know, if he sees any or if he suspects any, that I'll be glad to come out and look with him and help him identify.
Just think up that due to the rock.
But I don't know the scale on the property currently.
But isn't what we're voting on today having to do with release on city property?
The motion further in the meeting is to authorize the release on city property. That we will only release on city property if the potato vine is found.
Okay, that was my question. Okay.
And so then we're going to assume if we're releasing it on a piece of city property that abuts to Mr. Smith's piece of property, that somehow Mr. Smith has given tacit approval for that release as well.
Well, honestly, I mean, just to be very blunt, with the approval from APHIS, we don't have to have approval from, I mean, like, you know, if we release it one place, wherever it moves to after that, you just have to have the federal approval to let it go. So I don't have their potato on my property, but I could release it there because legally we have the permit to release it in Georgia, and it'll go where it's food sources. I mean, not so town.
Providing an advisory service to our citizens that there will be an APHID release within the city of St. Mary's that will attack and hopefully control the potato vine.
Somewhat. We don't, basically when we started this initiative, we're looking to solve a problem. And we don't want anything to be, we want it to be transparent. We also want the community to be on board. We don't want to do anything that the council would be against or that the county would be against or that the citizens as a whole would be against.
Well, if the media package that you have and then working with the city and maybe with the media to make sure everything's clear about how it's going to be done, where it's going to be done, and essentially many of us can be affected by that. I think we do our utmost to make sure we take advantage of that package while we're at it. Also, and if there's something we can put on the website.
We will be placing it on the website for tonight, and then we will, that way people can identify, just like on the newspaper, you can identify the leaf, identify the plant, and even identify the red beetle.
Yeah.
Jessica, will you have some extra beetles in case we find it on our property? Want to come get a little shed?
Well, currently, what we're doing is we're working with the Florida Department of Ag, and they've agreed to give us a certain amount of beetles that they charge, just like they do to their landowners. We're going to have to work to find, we're trying to take it one step at a time. I don't know, I think for a while they'll continue to supply for us, but we, you know, at some point, we're going to have to either get the Georgia Department of Ag involved and get them to help us out some, or come up with some other supply system. But working with them was the first step, because they've done it before, and they know what they're doing, and they already have it. So we wanted to kind of get the ball rolling first, but we do hope to have supply for whoever needs it. So I've seen plenty of it, and then now I look for it everywhere I go, so I...
Does the, does this beetle have any natural predator, and how do you replace them after you lose them?
After you lose them?
Yeah.
So basically, they reproduce quickly enough to sustain their population as long as there's a food source. As far as I'm aware, I don't know of any natural predators here, but as soon as their food source is gone, in the trials, they've all died off.
Okay.
They just starved to death.
Well, in the essence of time here at Speedy, were there any more?
Well, I just want to say you seem very articulate and knowledgeable. Very much.
Thank you. And also, I mean, if there are any questions from anyone in the county, of course, and citizens, I can come up trying to identify it. I'm also available for site visits and consultations at any time, and that's where I can come my dogs.
Okay, and we'll make sure your contact information is on the website. And it'll be in the article, I suspect. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The next, we have a finance officer's presentation, Mr. Holman.
Jennifer. Marcia. Mayor, I am proud to announce that the City of St. Mary's has received the Government Finance Officers Association Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting. This is provided to us by the Government Financing Officers Association because we have, for our comprehensive annual financial report. It's the highest form of recognition in the area of government accounting and financial reporting. And its attainment represents a significant accomplishment by our government and its management. They specifically mention Jennifer Brown, our finance officer. And Jennifer wanted to make sure Marcia was here because without staff, she would not be able to make this happen. So I want to congratulate them. And we will provide a news release on this for everyone. But I want to make everyone aware and congratulate Jennifer.
Is this the third one?
What's the other award that you get all the time?
We get some budget award.
Budget.
That's great. For our finance statement.
Oh, wow. You're setting all kinds of records.
Yes, we are.
Thanks for keeping
Thank
it straight.
You.
Yeah, it's super.
And you'll properly display that.
Yes, I'm sure that they'll be sending their flags.
We need more flags on the wall.
That will display it out in our budget awards.
Good. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Staff.
Thank you.
Thank
Marcia.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Appreciate Thank you, Marcia. Too.
Excellent work.
Mr. Coleman, you're not sitting down.
No, I'm not.
Okay. And you have an introduction to me.
Yes, I do.
Must be, I was
just so you know, the staff was a little concerned after Chief Horton had a little trouble remembering a name at one of the meetings. In case you're wondering, they provided me this.
So, the dead bus hurt?
We'll let it down someday, just not yet. Okay. I want to take the opportunity to introduce Mr. Jeffrey Adams. Please come up. He is our new land development zoning officer, I call a community development officer. I want Mr. Adams to take an opportunity to introduce himself to the mayor and council and to the rest of our citizens.
Well, gracious welcome, Jeff.
Absolutely.
I'm excited and honored, and that's the first time he's called me by my correct name today.
That's a way to get started off in the right month.
But no, it's great to be here. You know, they asked me why I wanted to come from Kansas to here, and I said this.
Well, you better show the rest of them behind you.
It's a homecoming. I'm a Georgia dog, and it's great to come back to the South. I've been out being a planner, regional planning. I've also done work on military housing and other forms of planning. But to get a chance to come back here, and I have my in-laws have a beach home over in front of Venetian Beach since the 70s. And so I've been coming to this area and on and off for 30 years now. And so I just see such potential in this area. The historic component, the small town, I really believe in rural America and small towns, and to get a chance to come and be a part of a real community and protect that community going forward, really looking forward to working with all of you.
Well, we're most happy to have you, and we thank you, and we have lots on the plate over the next 2 years with visioning and master planning, but as well as the whole mapping of our processes that we use for planning and zoning, so it's clear to the public, and we're going to really use your expertise. So welcome, and welcome to your family.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And now Chief Hatch.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'd like to introduce to you one of our more recent hires. Ladies and gentlemen of the city, we'll try not to have our back to you the whole time. This is Rob Duckworth. He is our most recent graduate of the Police Academy, and he is coming to us from the United States Marine Corps, where he is a veteran of service there. He even served here at our Naval Submarine Base, Kings Bay, as a security force member. He finished off right before his last getting out of the service. He finished off as a tour in Afghanistan. He was one of the last American forces to leave Camp Lebanek in the Helmand province and turn it over to the Afghan nationals. So he's got quite a bit of experience for one his age, and he's taking his service to a smaller level and bringing it to our local community where he, I tried to get him to say that he came here because he heard this was the best police department in the nation, but it's actually because he's going to get married and he's making St. Mary's his home.
Oh, good.
Yeah. All right. Great.
But he's done well. He made it through the academy in good style. He's academically very sound and shoots straight and drives without hitting things over there. Mr. Mayor, you probably know that they have a special cone up there that they call the mayor. And he did not run the mayor over while he was driving. So anyway, cross up for him and welcome to St. Mary's.
The work that's been done by staff and Mr. Holman and the chief and working to get the force back up to full staff has been great. And both of our officers that are here are great examples of what we've been doing, the quality of the people are the most great. Thank you. Thank you. Council, we need to set the consent agenda, and let's start out with old business. We have an authority boards, commissions, and committee project updates. And we have a sign ordinance amendment on historic preservation. And then we have a new business item, Georgia Forestry Commission, UGA Extension Office, Air Potato People.
Consent.
Special use permit for Mr. Barrick.
Consent.
reverse subdivision, and the three American investments.
Consent.
I'd like to abstain on that one.
Mutual aid agreements, Kings Bay Fire Assistance.
Consent.
St. Mary's Library, Copulus.
Consent.
Please, I have a couple questions.
Right, all right, I have old business A and, excuse me, for consent items, I have new business A, new business B, C, and D.
Right.
Mr. Mayor, make a motion to accept the consent agenda as read.
Okay, Mr. Riley, and I've got Mr. Caldwell, any comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Madam Clerk, that's unanimous, I just don't know. And now, can we have approval of the event agenda?
So moved. Second.
Well, can I have a motion?
So moved.
I'm sorry, I could not hear. A second with Mr. Caldwell. All right, any discussion? Comments, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, abstained. Okay, Madam Clerk, that's unanimous, please, thank you. All right, we have granting audience to talk. Please step forward and give your name and address.
Tom Cannon, 410 Plumfield Place. I'm sorry, I didn't get my client originally applied, but now it's Mr. Adams doing the 169. The subject is an agenda item that you have tonight for the changing the sign ordinance and the authority associated with that. Over the past 12, 18 months, there's been a lot of discussion about that. I've expressed to various opportunities my concern about doing something just opposite of streamlining and simplifying the rules, regulations, and how they're processed. I think this is going contrary to making things simpler for the citizens, the merchants, and the people downtown. So I do not support assigning any part of this sign ordinance responsibilities to other appointed groups with specific agendas and limited scope. Specifically, the HPC and other appointed groups should advise the planning office on their concerns regarding signage and should and they should be work on those that advice and they need the decisions and recommendations of the planning office to the council. I respectfully request that you vote no on this sign ordinance amendment. I add that, as you all know, before the changes are made to this sign ordinance, whatever they may be, the city should be factoring in or considering that we have a downtown steering, a visiting steering committee that will also, I'm sure, have some inputs on the appropriate signage and what it should look like and where it should go. And I think this is a step that will just complicate that issue. And then lastly, now with Mr. Jeffrey Adams, our committee development officer here, I think he should have an opportunity to take a look at the existing ordinances and also factor in the steering committee recommendations. Before we make any more changes to the ordinances that I see, just makes life more complicated. So again, I ask you to vote no. Thank you.
Okay. Blake, who's next, please?
Tony Blazebrook, 308 Osby Circle. I'd like to speak just briefly to the sign ordinance, but in a different perspective than Mr. Cunningham. I don't want to talk about the merits because I haven't studied the issue that carefully to know whether this is a good or bad idea. But as I look at it from first glance, there are some areas that would appear to be fairly restrictive. And if we're looking as a part of visioning at how we might create more foot traffic downtown and how we might create economic development, it would appear that that could be somewhat restrictive in the area. But my question is really on timing. you know, we're just beginning to get this visioning process off the ground, really haven't started yet, and to introduce new ordinances right when we're beginning this other process just makes me say, is the timing right? Is this the prudent thing to do? So when you enter the discussion on this subject, I'd just like to ask your consideration for timing. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next, please?
Kay West Berry, HGC. That's not what I came to talk about, but I'd like to sign on this, but I would like to comment that we've been working on this 4 years. And every time we just about get it done, we have to start over because somebody needs to come on board or something new has happened and it's never finished. And by nature, I think when things are in the historic district, they are more restrictive. It's obvious, that's the given, you know, you can't just do anything you want to with a historic property. So, but anyway, I mean, we're open to anybody, I guess, that you know, wants to review it before they understand what the master planning and all that. It's just that it's gone so wrong. I think we've been through this parade city manager, it seems like. And you know, and then we're on I guess, planning department directors now. And I don't know, we've just been through so many times and we've given so many people a chance to talk. And we've had so many hearings, we've had so many people at our meetings that at some point we just gotta do something. But if you wanna hold, you know, nobody's gonna die. We just want something concrete to go by. We've been up in here for so long, we have to stop and think. Is this, you know, every time something comes up at our meeting, it's government, which code are we on? Is the old one? Is it the one that we, you know, y'all approved one time before? Or is it the new one? I mean, if we vote something that's gonna be changed next month, you know, or the new one, it's just, it's hard to figure out. But that's not what I'm here about. I'm here tonight because I'm not really sure I'm representing the HGC, Oak Grove Cemetery Authority, the Sons of American Revolution, the Daughters of American Revolution. We're having a fantastic ceremony on September 12th. I want you all to participate. 10 o'clock in the morning. This started because when I wrote my book on Oak Grove, the DAR, Daughters of American Revolution, Earl Cameron chapter, noticed how many Revolutionary War soldiers I have listed that are buried in Oak Grove. At the time, we had 9 marked graves, and we were pretty sure there were a lot of unmarked soldiers there. And so they had asked me for a tour, and they wanted to see those specific stones, which I took them out. So they were interested in marking them with DAR emblems. There's about 4 of the 9 that have markers about their service. And they apparently meet jointly sometimes with the Sons of American Revolution from St. Simon's. That's the Marshes of Glen chapter. So they started in trying to figure out how many soldiers we had, you know, unmarked, and I started doing research for them. It's fantastic. We had gotten up to about 20, and the SAR members told me that Midway, Georgia, thought they had 21, and we started talking about who had the most soldiers in their cemetery. And so we just sort of thought, yeah, this is amazing. You know, we need one more time. We think that's the most in Georgia. We need one more. So we sort of fired a shot over their bow. And anyway, SAR went up to Midway, and they could only find 17. So we were on 20. And so we came along, and we found 9 more. And I found them because I looked at people that nobody ever looked at. Like, when you have a list of yellow fever victims, and you see the right age to serve, and you start looking at their name, and it's an odd name like Eleazar Venus, you know, the guy. it's fascinating to do the research. Anyway, we think we have 29. We think this is probably going to be one of the biggest ceremonies in the United States. We have seen one or two others where they honored more soldiers than we have, you know, at one time. But this is way up there. And we checked with Savannah, they don't have any records. They know they have Revolutionary War soldiers, but they don't, because of the list of unmarked, they were not sure. And I've been told that Savannah was a whole lot of loyalists, you know, so maybe there weren't as many patriots there as anywhere else. But anyway, so we were going from that as we're having the ceremony on September 12th. And we are reaching out to descendants of these 29. We have found quite a few of them going through DAR records and putting articles in the local paper, burning the paper, and I'm sorry, I had people call me, we actually got this limit of Betsy Ross. But anyway, September 12th, 10 o'clock, Waterfront Park, Grand Shell. We'd like the mayor to read a resolution for us in honor of our patriots, the small buddy with July 4th. Is that if you're on the Friends of Oak Grove Cemetery Facebook site, you'll see the new pedestal we built at the flagpole. And there's a bronze blackboard installed with the 29 names. It's beautiful. We're going to run up the Betsy Ross flag that day. It's 13 stars in a circle. We're going to start, like I say, at Grand Shell at 10. We've been looking for a bagpiper, but we haven't found him yet, so we may not have him. But we have Lottie Winston, patriotic music. We have the base commander, Steve. I'm speaking. We have the study officers from the SNRBAR. We may even get some national. We're not sure about that. But so far, participating Sons of American Revolution, Daughters of American Revolution, Veterans of Foreign Wars, the Masons, Boy Scouts, it goes on, Junior ROTC. We're having a color guard from the Navy, and we're also having a color guard in period costume. It's like George Washington, the pictures you always see. And after the speeches, the music, and the musket ceremonies, we'll read their names. We're going to march to Oak Grove. When we get there, we're going to dedicate the big flag. And we're going to have reenactors in every grave that's marked. Every grave has a square on stone with SARDAR on it. That's the Ross flag, and all the memories. And we're going to put the descendants of the graves of their ancestors. And we're going to have a reenactor, hopefully, of each grave who's going to give the story to that soldier. So, you know, it's quite a day. So, anyway, it's going to be a big ceremony. I'm really proud of the brother because it's the most unique in Georgia. We got something new.
Okay, do we have any marker in the history walk that refers back to the Revolutionary War?
I don't know. I haven't seen what's all of history mark yet.
You might get with Angela and see if there's anything that we're missing.
I've read the markers, which are pretty much the same. Isn't anything on the Revolutionary War something we can certainly add?
It's just a thought. I mean, they're being made up now, so.
It's just such a fantastic history because of so many of these men came here to find their fortune after the war. And they were all leaders in this town. This town's created by a lot of Revolutionary War soldiers. It's just been fascinating doing the research. John Stokes buried on the Blue Boots property in a letter had written that he was a friend of from John Patterson, who y'all probably already know, built U.S. Gallon, St. Mary's, mm-hmm. and a beautiful sailing ship of a gentleman right here at Waterfront. And Shakespeare says that he had known John Patterson for many years and that they were friends, that they were both members of the Society of Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. You know what that is? That means they were officers under George Washington. Mm-hmm. They were both Pennsylvania line of captains, and they're right here. So there's so much history.
We need to look at that. Please do go with it and see what we've got.
I just thought that maybe this was the War of 1812.
It's our history.
It's all history.
And if we're missing something, we need to fix that.
Okay. Well, we can also direct people over to the cemetery to see the plaque that's over there.
Yeah. Could be both. Sure.
Thank you very much,
Kate.
Thanks.
Okay.
Who's next, please?
Dave Smith, one of them, and I'm a circle off the travel. I hadn't planned to say anything, but when we started talking about signs, I would like to offer a challenge. Next time you get off the interstate coming to St. Mary's on our entry points, be it exit 1 or exit 3, 4, take note of the signage. I challenge you to count them and find that there are, you will find, like I have, that there are way more crooked ones than there are straight ones. I had occasion last year to go to Mr. Heidrich and our lovely wives to Thomasville race. I didn't see a crooked sign in the whole place. Just food for thought.
Okay, thank you. Who's next? All right, thank you very much. All right, Council, first item under old business is Authority Board Commissions and Committee Project Update, and Ms. Persky.
Yes, First, if there's anyone in the audience who was not able to pull up the package or is interested in the package that is in the council package tonight, the feedback from the board's authority session that we had, just email me and I'll send you an electronic copy of it if you're interested in reading it. It is quite a bit of information and I have a cover letter on it. I didn't expect all of you to read this and totally complete it just in this short period of time. But I think looking over all the feedback, we got feedback from 23 people. It was, people spent a lot of time giving feedback and I felt it was worthwhile to capture all their thoughts. And the document really goes item by item with all the comments that were received. A lot of them more abbreviated than, so to make the document actually a little more readable. But basically, as I was going through and trying to digest everything and prepare for today, it became evident to me that we actually are going to have to do this project in three phases. That's what I'm recommending. Because there's really a little bit more evaluation and investigation to do before we go into what I see decision, phase two, the decision-making process. And then phase three being the documentation of any changes we might make, making sure all the ordinances are right, making sure that the public is fully aware of everything. And so I'm recommending we have a work session. And what I recommend that we discuss at the next work session is, make sure I don't forget anything. One, would it be appropriate for us temporarily at least to assign a liaison to every board authority and committee and commission so that we can have some one-on-one discussions with the entities, make sure we have all our facts straight, make sure we really understand where they're coming from and what they see as their role. And also, in order to do that, to determine how the city council is viewing that entity too. By working one-on-one, I think we'll be able to get better feedback and some good participation because we're really doing a self-evaluation here and trying to find ways that we can do things better and improve our processes, improve our communication processes between the entities and council. And we'll look at the specific things like training needs. Now, Linda Williams was generous enough to offer to give some assistance in identifying the components of the basic training that every volunteer should go through. So she has expressed an interest in working on that. And also, we need to find a way for the entities to be able to provide feedback to us on a regular basis as we go through this process. Obviously, all the work sessions will be public work sessions, but also to just get a little bit better, making sure we really, really have a good understanding of each of the boards and authorities, what the documentation looks like so we can move forward to phase two in the decision-making process. So to start to talk about some of those things, I'm asking that we establish a work session to go into phase one.
How much time do you want?
I'm guessing we should have an hour, I would think. What is everyone else think? I've sort of listed the things we need to talk about.
You want 4:30 prior to the council meeting on the 20th.
That's fine with me.
We've got quite a bit.
Yes, that's fine with me.
You're saying 4:30. Is there another work?
No, there's not, but we have an hour, and then if we need to slip anything else in there, we still have a little bit of time. Otherwise, we can have time with the audience. Does that counsel?
That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Now, does anyone have any specific questions they have for me? I know it's a lot of information to digest. But
we need to go back through this and then get to you individually.
Yes, you, okay. Yes.
All right, anything else? Thank you for all the hard work and the analysis on that. It's quite comprehensive. Took a lot of time. We're very appreciative. All right, if we're done with A, I'd like to move on to B, which is the sign ordinance amendment. Can I have a motion so we can get into discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I make a motion that we accept the The ordinance, amendment to the ordinance is written and provided to us.
All right, Mr. Riley, second?
I'll second.
Okay, Mr. Colvin. All right, and welcome, everybody. How do you want to proceed, John?
If I could, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to go over the history of this ordinance from where we started to where we are now. And this started prior to coming to the work on this ordinance. Now, this is only the historic preservation district. This doesn't deal with the rest of the city sign ordinance. This is strictly that one ordinance. This started when the businesses came to my office to meet with myself, and at that time, Roger Reaver, who was our community development officer, were concerned about the fact that they could not put up temporary signs or banners. Our ordinances did not allow that in the HPC. We went back to the HPC after our meeting with the businesses. We met with Kay and the HPC, and we worked out what we thought were sort of reasonable ordinance to try and address this problem. One way we went at that was one that could come in and get permission for temporary signs in a permanent location. A way to explain that is they first come into staff here, and staff reviews the request, which says, we want a permanent location to put temporary signs or banners. So they make that application. That application then goes from my staff to the HPC, because it is in the Historic Preservation District. The HPC then will review it and approve or disapprove, depending. Most times it is an approval on it. After that, this signage then, when they come in and they want to put a banner in this location, all they have to go is to our staff. Staff then approves that banner. Does not have to go to the HPC again unless they change the location. Once the location's approved, then we're good. It's only a change of location that makes it. So right now, we are very restricted on what we allow in the Historic Preservation District. This actually relieves that restriction. Following that, we had to have a review done by the attorney, because we actually dealt with the language that could be on the sign. Well, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. We're violating the First Amendment rights. So we had to take that out. That's part of what the attorney did. If you'll remember, we reviewed this with the attorney back in on April 20th. We scheduled a work session so we could go back and look at a couple of ordinances on that date. Then we took it back to the HPC. We made the changes that were recommended by the attorney. There were only two other minor changes we had to make after that, which was the initial fee. That is when you go to the HPC for the permanent sign location, and then a fee for each time you come in. For the permanent sign location, I think the fee is $50. Your initial one, then after that, it's only $10 when we come in, which actually covers our cost of processing the approval. Beyond that, it removes the language that would just be considered unconstitutional. Now, if you're going to ask me, and you may, do I think a sign ordinance will change a year from now as we get through the land development, the zoning, and the visioning plan? Sign ordinance evolve. Sign ordinances evolve. They change constantly. Number one, because people come up with new ways to put up signs. So you have to deal with them. And this will occur in the HPC district and our signs. At this point, this actually addresses the problem that our businesses had so that we can put up banners. And HPC has the right to approve. Now, if HPC disapproves, they do have the right to appeal. That person that put it in has the right to appeal. That appeal comes to the council. Mayor and council, just like in a planning decision, deals with the appeal. We have an appeals hearing for the person. and they can either support the HPC or you support the person. That's strictly up to the mayor and council. This is the way this ordinance reads. So the idea is to relax some of the restrictions, not to increase it.
I had a couple questions, but a comment first.
Oh, just to make sure, did Michelle or Jeff, did you have any part or comments yet before?
I think Mr. Holman, you did.
Okay. All right. Well, why don't we go to question, because this will open back for Dave. I'm sorry.
No problem. Make sure we were all the way where I can say a couple words. But as I understood the comments that came before us tonight, it sounded as if people thought we were implementing a new ordinance, when in fact what we are doing is amending an existing ordinance to make it easier, or not easier, I shouldn't say, but less restrictive, and also to remove language that's unconstitutional against the law. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
One simple example of that is when the sailors come in for Thanksgiving. We tried to do a welcome sign up on, they wanted to do a welcome sign at the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
The ordinance didn't allow it. HPC wanted to grant them an ordinance. They wanted to grant them a permit, but the ordinance just said no.
Right.
So how do you handle that? Yeah. Now, we use a little common sense sometimes, but we want to do something that's in compliance with the ordinance, not violate the ordinance.
Right. And the second part of my comment is that as our visioning committee is reviewing things and having people come before with ideas and things like that, they'll have the opportunity to come forward and discuss any issues that they might have with the sign ordinance that exists at that time. Is that not correct?
Yes, I will.
Okay, thank you. I did have a question, but I'll let anybody else have a comment first.
I just wanted to ask very briefly, Ms. Adams, you've only been on board a few days now, not the 4 years that this thing has been evolving, but are you comfortable with this and that you feel conversant with the ordinances and the amendments that we're proposing?
As far as this one?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I feel comfortable with this. I agree with what's been said by Mr. Holman.
Okay, good. Thank you, sir.
I did have a question then, too. In the 6G, you say, except as noted herein, push-in signs may not be located on sidewalks. Now, when you refer to sidewalks, I'm thinking of a cement sidewalk. Are there other types of sidewalks before I ask the second part of the question?
It's on sidewalks or on street right-of-ways or medians. You could actually have a permeable sidewalk.
You could.
You could have a permanent sidewalk. Yeah, sidewalks don't have to be made of concrete.
Okay, that's the reason I was asking the question, because the freestanding signs are meant to be pushed into the ground, and I had trouble visualizing them going in through the cement, so.
Okay.
I am, but, you know, it's going in, and we don't want to have to mend it next week again. Okay. Thank you.
I have just a couple. Or you want to go around the room?
No, you set up tall, so please go ahead.
I just have, well, one thing, Mr. Holman, would you make sure that it's clarified to the visioning team that they shouldn't see this as restrictive, that they are still can use their imagination and be as creative as they want and not, because I see the value in getting this passed right now, but I don't, I know there was concern about whether we would cramp their creativity through it.
This shouldn't cramp the creativity. They should be looking at everything as we move forward.
Okay.
Well, not only this visioning team,
but the next
visioning team shouldn't be, mm-hmm. see anything as locked in stone, because the rewrite of the land development zoning ordinance actually occurs in the next plan, the plan that we're preparing to begin soon. I hear about the OEA grant, but that's when that next plan begins. And that's where we get the rewrite of the land development and zoning ordinances that I believe Mr. Adams is now and Michelle are looking forward to and working on.
And then I just have one question and one comment. Paragraphs 5C, it indicates planning staff shall have the authority to approve any sign in the historic district that matches exactly the existing sign regarding size, shape, and location. Then it goes on to say text and color are not within the authority of the planning staff to review or approve. Does that mean that HPC has the right to review?
No, no.
Then I think it needs to just a little addition of saying HPC.
We had the attorney review this, and that's one of the reasons he took a look at it, was that the text and color, that, trying to be very clear in that, that we don't have any ability to approve text or color.
Then I think it needs to say planning staff nor HPC.
We can add that slide.
Because it almost sounds, it says all other signs must be reviewed by HPC. So it sounds like, okay, planning can't do that, but HPC might be able to. Just to make sure it's very clear that neither one have the right. And then just a minor question, E is just somewhat subjective. It's so hard when we have ordinances that are subjective because it becomes a matter of opinion. And it just says signs must not distract or detract from the visual historic character of St. Mary's. I don't know what does that mean, you know?
The historic character, it should be within the historic character.
How do you describe that? It is subjective.
But it is within, you know, the...
That's actually within the existing ordinance, that's not something that would be...
I think that's what the historical commission...
That's what the HPC does.
Determine. That's exactly why they're there.
It's within their purview to determine if it meets...
Yeah, I just want to, it's just hard when it's something is subjective.
This is no change, this is current.
I know, but I'm just making the comment. That's it.
Bob?
No comments.
I have a little one, and maybe I'm reading it wrong. It's on page five, line eight, prohibited signs. It says the following types of signs are prohibited in all zoning districts of the city. Is this thing written for the historical only? Why are we talking about all zoning districts? And when you said that, you say that in all zoning districts of the city, you went on and said digital signs aren't allowed, and they're in the rest of the city. So that needs to be corrected to show...
Well, because any of the zoning within the city can be in the HPC. You can have residential, commercial, industrial. All the zoning districts can exist.
Within
the HPC.
Oh, I was thinking...
Now, we don't have industrial in the HPC, but if you think about it, the zoning district, you could have commercial without residential.
But it reads like in all zoning districts of the city. So it reads like you're outside the city, outside of the historical district.
You have to go back to the beginning of the ordinance where it was just the regulation of signs within St. Mary's historic district.
I know, but it does read in the city.
Right. Same thing.
Yes, sir.
I had one other comment. It's on page 13. It's a change that you're making, and you're taking out that shows nudity is defined in OCGA paragraph 32.675, and you're replacing that with the lewd exposure to sexual organs. And the problem is, I would think that OCGA describes that, defines that a little bit better. As I understand, if you have to read a sign, it's not legal. So you have to read it to see what you're referring to. So why would we not want to leave that as just law?
It's specifically made by the attorney.
Is it really?
In regard to the court orders.
Well, he knows more than I do. So.
I can just tell you.
I recognize my...
That's quite an admission.
Yeah, it is.
This is going to be much.
Yeah.
Yep. Not much, though.
Ms. Caldwell? Ms.
Morris? I'm done for this.
Okay. Council?
Wait, you didn't give me a chance.
No, I said...
Yeah, but you looked away before I even...
I'm sorry. Please.
I'm part of the visioning committee, and while ordinarily I would think that we need to postpone any major decisions, this is not a major decision. This is something that's been in process ever since I've been on council, and we just need to wrap this up and move on and then let the visioning committee add, change, modify, direct, do whatever it's going to do. But we need to get this finished.
Okay.
Thank you. Sorry.
Anybody out? Okay, I think, are we ready for vote? All right, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate that. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Will my one little change be made to include HBC? Okay, yes.
Abstain. All right, Madam Clerk, pretty much that is unanimous. All right, and we have one new business item, the St. Mary's Library copier lease, and I think you had a question.
Yes, I just, you know, going over the math, I had a couple of questions. One, it appears that this actually is, will be spending more money than we would if we outright purchased the print, the copiers, by like $1,500 or something like that, by paying the monthly, if we go with the 60 month. And isn't that correct? I mean, if we bought it outright, it'd be $3,998. If we paid $94 for 60 months, that ends up to be $5,640.
Then you got depreciation and all.
Well, and you got
plus paper and everything else that comes in.
And maintenance and materials.
No, this is before the maintenance. The maintenance is an additional cost.
Yeah, and I shouldn't say anything. We'll leave that to the expert.
Yeah, and then my other question is, if the library uses less, makes less copies in a given year, would that be reduced?
It is. They only charge per copy. On that, so if, you know, it would be, it's something that's based on the number of copies that you actually make.
So that's not a flat fee?
No. And also, we actually charge people per copy, so we actually do make some of the money back that actually helps pay for this copy. People come in, if they want to print things, or any copies made, or whatever we actually do.
Now, with the 6 month lease, so this figure for the monthly is really based on number of copies made.
The 60 month lease, I don't know that right offhand, and Amy's not here for me, but I could get information back.
Well, no. If we're leasing it, then they have full responsibility to maintain it.
They have full responsibility.
So they're not charging us for the maintenance here. This maintenance is strictly for copies.
You just pay for copies, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
They provide us with all the toner and everything for the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just actually paying for, no, we have to buy it. So we buy the paper, and we pay for the number of copies. However, they provide us with all the toner and maintenance on the machine.
So even though we're paying a little bit more, we don't pay any service charges when the machine dies. Right.
And then after 5 years, when I stopped buying copiers years ago, because the answer is you need to get rid of that copier after 5 years. When you lease them, they take that copier away, a new copier comes in, and more than likely, after 5 years, the new copier you get is probably going to cost less than the lease you have on your previous copier, because just the cost of electronics is dropping over the years, not going up. So I've always found that leasing now is better. I stopped buying copiers.
I just wasn't sure if this $6,684 was a flat fee, and they were also charging us to maintain the equipment. So, okay, I'm comfortable with it now.
Yeah. Lease versus buy analysis sometimes really send you down a different path than really what I think what you expect. But the ancillaries really end up, and it's like the maintenance on a car. It's great to have it, lease it or buy it. You'll have lots of arguments about it. But is this the same firm that we're using for some of the other copy equipment, or was this based on a bid?
Hearing is a company that we use for some of our other copy purposes, okay. And we did check with the state contract, and they actually gave us the price of the
good.
Right. I don't think you had a motion, so I'll move that we purchase the copy, or we enter into the agreement for the release of the copy machine as recommended by
second.
Staff.
Thank you, Ms. Conrad. And second by Ms. Williams. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Madam Clerk, mark that as unanimous, and thank you for the work. When does that equipment show up. Thank you. Tell Judy stop and tell us thank you someday.
Will, yeah.
Appreciate it. Now, you have a report on the finance director?
I do. We have some financial courses when they have any questions about it.
Looks good to me.
Well, it's super jammed, yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the, Mr. Wiley and I were talking earlier, there's really two good stories in there. The positive situation year on year for tourism and for the aquatic center.
Mm-hmm.
And so both of them look much better. And particularly the aquatic center, I think it was a combination of weather. I don't know what June will do to this number. Hopefully it won't be impacted.
June so far, what we were looking at was looking very positive. We've had a lot of hot weather, only a lot of rain in the last several days, but.
July will be a problem.
But it actually is very well.
Mm-hmm.
But based on the trend lines we have for each of those individual components, we're about on a trend line. Right, okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, just super work. I mean, what this report shows us is that we're right now in really good shape and we just need to continue on that track and invest wisely as we go forward.
All right, thank you very much, Jennifer.
No buying Greek progress.
Madam Clerk, calendar?
Yes, sir, there are several meetings coming up. Tomorrow, there is a work session here regarding the trolley location at 5 p.m. On Wednesday, there's an airport authority meeting here in the council chambers at 6 p.m. The SMIG meeting for Thursday has been canceled. And at 6 p.m. on Thursday, there's a third quarter town hall meeting here in the council chambers. And on Friday, there's court. On Monday at 8:30 a.m., there's a downtown development authority meeting in the Main Street office. On Tuesday the 14th, there's a 10:30 a.m. Senior Advisory Committee meeting at the Senior Center. At 6:30, also on Tuesday the 14th, there's a hospital authority meeting at the Juan Hernandez Building. And at 6 p.m., also on the 14th, is an Orange Hall Foundation meeting. On Wednesday the 15th, there's a Board of Ethics meeting at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. On Thursday the 16th, at the Submarine Museum meeting is at 8 a.m. at the Submarine Museum. And finally, on Friday the 17th, there's a Camden County Joint Development Authority meeting at 9 a.m. at the Kingsland North Center and City Court. And that is it. This is the next council meeting.
Should we add the steering committee meetings?
Sure.
There's one Wednesday at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
6 to 5. 6.
6.
This coming Wednesday?
Yeah.
In the Main Street
Hall. Right.
And then we also have a 4:30 boards and authorities meeting at 4:30 on the 20th.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Anything else we? The only thing I want to say about the from a report of the mayor is obviously we have a tremendous support despite the intermittent thunderstorm. I think our thanks to the folks that put that on, and there's some of them here today that just did a tremendous job. And a few of you want to stand that would help put that 4th of July on. Would you do that? I know you don't want to, but would you stand and please be recognized? Thank you.
Let me add to that, just to tell you what kind of volunteers we have, the Thurners who just stood up. We're on the job with the vendors at 5:30 in the morning. They didn't leave until 12 at night. Worked straight through, and that's the kind of volunteers we have in Kiwanis. But I also want to say that we have tremendous city employees. We have Bobby and his public works. After church, went downtown, and there was nothing. Still there. I understand this is one of the messiest vendor groups we've ever seen. And it was sparkling clean, and everybody in Public Works does a wonderful job at that, and supporting the whole festival all the way through. And then I heard Chief Hatch, who walked the streets constantly, all day long. And Chief, we want to thank you for that, too.
And all the teams. There were a lot of staff.
If we're going to do this, bro, we can't leave out Robbie. I mean, the fire department. Did he say Robbie?
Golf now.
And then I understand Mr. Goodman and Ms. Bailey were out cleaning the streets.
I heard that, too.
So, I mean, it's almost one of those things that everybody ought to stand up and pat themselves on the back.
The city event, and that's what we had. Everybody in the city participated. So that was great.
Yeah, I don't think we can really say enough and say it the right way for everybody that does this. And it just shows everybody who we are. And I can't tell you how many people I talked to during the course of the day from out of town, and a few of them that were moving to town, and even one yesterday that I talked to on the sidewalk over here, or was this morning, excuse me, moving into town, and had gone to the festival and had come from Charlotte and will never leave.
That's so true.
A great compliment to our city, but also to what you do, so thank you. And the other thing is we have a meeting on tomorrow that has a lot of public interest, and then the quarterly town meeting on Thursday. So we look forward to seeing you all there that are interested.
All right.
And we've got a grinning audience to the public.
Gentlemen, my name is Jamie Canning. I'm the 410 Point People Place in St. Mary's. I came here in 1978. When we first came here, there was one light. There was no billboards, nothing in town. It was a very quaint little town. I watched the progression of this town through the years. And it's sad because now we have more billboards than you can count. We shouldn't even have them in town, but outside of town. But I drove downtown the other day with somebody and saw those little billboards in the middle of the street of the area there. And I thought to myself, you know, this is an encroachment of signs. Here we go again, signs in downtown St. Mary's. It just looks trashy. You know, I think I'm in New Jersey, so I'm on the boardwalk with all these signs. I can't see the city being trashed up like that. To me, that's bad. And if the businesses want more business to be seen, then let them do something like decorating their buildings so they can be seen by people. We've always been able to find a good shop. You know, it's not that big of a town, but I'm looking sad about these signs. I don't know what the historic committee is doing, but I don't agree with anything they've done so far. But I'm just sad. I feel sad about this happening to the town.
Thank you. Okay. All right, who's next? Uh-oh.
Okay, West Ferry HPC. The signs on medians, we had nothing to do with. Several years ago, the city council gave them temporary permission to put those out. We have tried, they limited them to five a median, each median. We just found out about this a few months ago. I mean, I don't think we ever really heard how that happened, because we never wanted to start with. When we did the first go around with the sign ordinance that you approved tonight, we were going to landing, but some city business people came up and said that, came to one of our meetings and said that that was a hardship on them if they couldn't advertise and they couldn't afford all those other signs and all this stuff. And the agreement was that we made with them to work together was that when things got better financially for the businesses downtown, that we would do something else. But in the meantime, they were allowed to keep them out there. But it was not the HPC that did that. Seems like we get all this from the another thing I want to say about the color, you were talking about the signs wrong, but we do not regulate color. The only color we regulate is if it's in the product, like a brick. The color of a brick and it's built in, or a metal roof for the colors in paint, we do not regulate. So And about the upcoming celebration I was telling you about, which planned to have several hundred people, maybe even more, it's going to be very big. And I wanted to have people call to me, they're renting houses in downtown St. Mary's for the weekend, just to, so it's going to be great. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, who's next? Council, could I start with Ms. Williams, any comments?
I just want to say that I'm very, very proud of the beautiful celebration that we had over the weekend, and it's a pleasure to work in a community where so many people pitch in and help with a huge festival like we put on. I did want to add a note of humor. It was pretty scary while I was down there on the waterfront in front of the Riverview Hotel selling t-shirts at about 2:45 when God decided he wanted to show us who was really in charge. That was an amazing sight to watch the fireworks, the lightning from a 180-degree perspective and have no place to go. You know, it was just fantastic. But it was a beautiful celebration, and I feel proud to have been a part of it.
Thank you.
I think that there's just not enough words to say how much I appreciate all the people throughout our city participating. And Jim's comment about city staff one comment I heard earlier today was that when that deluge of rain came down, people were looking out, and the firemen were out helping some of the vendors control their tents and getting things put away and stuff like that. So that's who we are, and that's a terrific thing that happens in this city. So.
Well, any 4th of July comments that I would have already been said. It is a terrific event. It's a city event, and very proud of it. But I also wanted to comment on one conference and one meeting that I attended over the past week. The first one being the GMA conference, and that's where we get a lot of training, and several of my colleagues up there were at that as well. And the training was valuable, but more important is the contacts that we make at those meetings. I learned about the cemetery celebration that we're going to have next year from a fellow that was chairman of the cemetery authority throughout the state, and he thinks that we got a terrific place down here as well. But all of the contacts that I made just went on about how much the city of St. Mary's is doing, and it makes you feel good when people recognize where you come from and what you're doing as a city. So we can all take a lot of pride in that, and that's recognized across the state. Of course, one of the things that helps that is the recognition that we're getting is the announcement on the state's board of a few weeks ago. That came up several times as well during the meeting. So that's something to look forward to see where that goes as we proceed. And the other one was just a short meeting, but it was a good meeting. It was on Complete Streets. It was this past Thursday, lasted about 5 hours. And it was terrific about giving us some ideas on things where we got problems. For example, the middle school where Spur 40 and Highway 40 come together, and that's really a hazard for the children over there as well as anybody else that's walking and turning or driving around the time school's letting out. And they gave us a couple ways that we can go and get a study done and things like that. And I'm looking at that with city manager and some others to see what we can do about getting that sort of a study and maybe getting some ideas. And then the Complete Streets, once we get that recognition, then that gives us a lot of vehicles for getting grants and so forth to help other areas with the multi-use paths that we've been pursuing and so forth. So all in all, at FSA, terrifically valuable meetings that I got to attend over the last few weeks, and that's all I have.
Yes, sir.
I can't say anything more about the Kwanians on the 4th of July, so I'll pass.
I just want to make a comment based on what Dave was talking about everything is about perspective, perception. At the GMA meeting that I was at also, I sat down to the first table. I sat down, there were like 7-8 other people, and we started getting to know each other, and I said, well, I'm from a small town. Are you from a small town also? And they said, yep, we're very small. I think there's 900 and some cities in Georgia. And I finally said, well, how big is your population? And one woman says, oh, we're up to 328 now that we have the detention center. And I said, and how the biggest city other than St. Mary's there was 952. And this is a table where 8 people were sitting at. So we always say we're a small town and all of this, but it's all a matter of perception. Many said, oh gosh, you're from a big city.
Bob? Thank you.
Yeah, I can't comment on the 4th of July here this year. Linda and I were out of town that day. We actually flying back in where we were in New York City. So we got to see a little bit of fireworks from a hotel. Actually, I guess it was more in Brooklyn and Queens than it was actually in Manhattan. So we did get to celebrate a little bit of the 4th, but we got here real late. It was like about 10 o'clock at night. Nothing like would have been celebrated here in town. But the other thing I wanted to share with everybody is that in the news, you might be reading things about our health system joining with Baptist and also Flagler Hospital down in St. Augustine. If you do, it's merely an affiliation. It has nothing to do with the hospital being sold or being purchased or anything along that line there, so don't be concerned about that. It's merely a move by the hospital to join other hospitals and healthcare facilities and groups to improve service. We will still be locally owned, locally operated.
That's a good ladder.
And, this does include both the Brunswick campus and the Henley campus for the hospital system. So if you read things about selling and buying our hospital, that is not going to happen. It's merely an affiliation with other facilities to improve the care provided through our system. And our hospital will be the same good quality service that it always had. Just thought I'd bring that up since I'm sure all of y'all got this letter too.
Well, that's an excellent point, Bob, because what this demonstrates is it's one size doesn't fit all, and as I believe the state code requires the use of the language of buy and sell and this activity that's going on with our health system. So, as Bob said, we agree with John Desai.
And not buying and selling anything. Our hospital is staying our hospital. And we operate it out of here.
Before I go to you, Mr. Holman, we have one thing that we'd like to do, and we're probably going to have to ask Mr. Colvo to get out of his, stand up out of his seat. And
when you move over this way, you can take
my position right there.
But we have, besides the cardboard box, we have from the University of Georgia and the Georgia Municipal Association, hereby certify that Sam L. Colville has satisfactorily completed the Harold F. Holtz Municipal Training Institute for Elected Officials as of June 29th, 2015. Whoa. I'm not sure you have enough room in your...
I don't know, absolutely. Well, I never have met Mr. Holtz, so I'll have to find out why he's giving me such a...
I will tell you one thing, that Georgia does a great job with offering courses and training for municipal officials and county officials, and we've all taken advantage of it, and it's as much the class itself as it is the networking that you've heard about here today, so we like to take advantage of that as much as we can, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. And Mr. Holman, once more to the podium here.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. The good news is I forgot my report.
So unfortunately, though, I remember who was on the report. I do want to start with Public Works and Mr. Moore. We'll say that the James Davis project is back underway. They've been on vacation for a week. The contractor and the subs have been gone. They are going to be coming back, which is nice. We're back to work. We are expecting a change order. We have not received that change order yet, Bobby, so we do not have what we need in order to further into that. Marsh Arbor is a moving forward, so that is staying on schedule. So I'm very happy with that one. That's continuing right along.
Just for the public's benefit, some may not remember, but Marsh Arbor is on
Marsh Arbor is Delvers. It's a sewer project.
Marsh
Arbor. I'm setting my desk on somewhere else. Okay. Yeah.
All right.
It's why I usually read off a report.
I recall that comment.
As we move forward in Public Works, we have run into a problem with regard to a sewer line that seems to be outside the right of way on the property of Hill Work. I do not have all the information to present to council. I'm hoping to have that information and a recommendation at the next meeting in July. It was constructed back in 75. This was just discovered a couple weeks ago as part of a construction for homes. Someone came in for a permit. We took a look at where the line was. The surveyor saw where the line was. It's outside the right of way. So we are working on coming up with a recommendation on a way to resolve that issue.
The term is prescriptive easement.
I understand what that does, but we still have to.
I understand.
So we are working on that. That will deal with Public Works. As the community development, I'm thrilled with community development because we have Jeffrey Adams in. I may be happy, but I believe Michelle's even happier than I am. As we come in. In community development, I do want to say that I'm looking forward to starting the full master envisioning plan as soon as we hear about the Office of Economic Adjustment. The grant, they asked us for additional information today. We're expecting to submit that tomorrow. They're just looking for clarifications. So we are continuing to work our way through it. And Mr. Adams has worked on OEA grants before, numerous times, and which is very helpful to us. So he'll be looking over what we're recently tomorrow. So we'll continue on that project. For community development, I'd like to invite everyone to attend the steering committee meeting, which will be at 6 p.m. on Wednesday in the Main Street office. The reason it's not here is that the Airport Authority is having their meeting here that evening. Now, one item that I will be going over with the Airport Authority is that the capital improvement plan for the airport, the FAA and the Georgia Department of Transportation have requested that they be submitted at the beginning of November now, as opposed to the end of December. So the plans have to be submitted earlier. So tomorrow I will be meeting with the Airport Authority. And
that's so logical, it's painful. And it certainly precludes all of that harum scaring that we always have to go through in our two meetings in December. That's good.
So we will be addressing that tomorrow night, or at least coming up with a plan so we can start addressing that. And I know last year the council had asked that we bring the information sooner. So I want to make sure that that came out at tonight's meeting that we had. In the fire department, I was at the GMA conference. The conference was very good. I found the training to be excellent. But also at the GMA conference, I did visit EM1. Which is the company we're looking at obtaining the fire trucks from through. One of the fire trucks that we were looking at was on display there, and I spent a couple hours with the vendor going over that fire truck. I want to thank Chief Horton for letting me know that that would be there. Chief Horton, Councilmember Colville, and myself will be going down to the EM1 facility on Friday. That's located in Ocala. to look at the manufacturing plant and talk to the contractor. So we are looking forward to beginning work on that project. So looking forward. Other than that, I did ask Mr. Adams to review the processes that we have in place for permit submissions and completion, so that if someone comes in, there'll be a chart and a timeline for them to take a look at on how their permits will roll through, what are the steps, which would include that if you want a variance or a special use, that would take it to a side choice and take you down another way. But this way people can see what happens when they submit an application and what the scheduling will be in order to get it done. I know that is something that council's been looking for, so we're going to, that's one of the first projects we are going to start on. So I'm looking forward to that. Other than that, I have nothing else unless there is a question from mayor or council.
Well, you know, what I'm going to have to talk about, we ran out of candy again.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, well, I got in trouble for that with my wife, who was handing you the candy, and from Becky Myers, who was out there handing you the candy. That was a tough effort.
It was a tremendous crowd. Do we know, Chiefs, by chance, how big the crowd was? There were a lot of surmises that it was one of the biggest crowds we've had, so.
We made it 2 more blocks than we did the last time.
I tell you, those last blocks, those kids looking at you wanting that candy.
They're
going to move further up the street.
Well, we are taking care of that. I've already been told, and as
they're starting to look a little vicious.
Yeah, so that you can make it to the end of that street. Because those kids do still tend to look a little
terrible.
Exactly. They're all feeling guilty, so.
Not many of them wanted to shake their hands.
Yeah, that's right. That wasn't a good trade-off.
I was driving, golf cart, so I was okay. I do want to say that this is about the fourth event I've driven, and I have not run over a foot yet.
Or dump the mayor on the back.
Dump the mayor out the back. No, nor my wife.
We're talking about any previous city managers.
No.
All right, but I think we're good, and
move to Jersey.
Mr. Colville, second. Mr. Nutter, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Why do I get this?